Hi, I'm Daniel Enzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with music director, arranger, and orchestrator James Olmsted. Olmsted's work as a composer and arranger has been presented on Broadway and in venues around the world. Some of his credits include collaborating with Hugh Jackman in From New York with Love, the Tony Awards, PBS Great Performances, and recently finishing a year as the music director for A Beautiful Noise, the Neil Diamond musical, on tour. Olmsted has created a new concert arrangement of the original score by Danny Elfman for Batman, directed by Tim Burton. This specially arranged score will be performed live by the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra as the full film is projected at Klein Hans Music Hall on March 14, 2026. The concert will be conducted by Ron Spiegelman. Tickets are available at bpo.org and in the show notes. In this interview, James and I speak about collaboration, old VHS tapes, the musicianship of Danny Elfman, and the Britney Spears musical. I hope you enjoy my conversation with James Olmsted. James Olmsted, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
Doing great. Happy to be here.
Excellent. It's fantastic to meet you. I'm so interested, and I always like to start off these interviews by asking, is there a story from your youth that connects to what you do now?
To what I do now as in music or with the Batman Symphony?
But I mean, either any, like, or I guess maybe I'll start with the second question then, because I think it's interesting to say that you are sort of a multi-hyphenate artist and musician. And so, like, when someone asks you what you do, how do you identify?
You know, I have come to recent terms where I just say I work in music. It can be from producing albums to, you know, orchestrating to conducting. It's a kind of across the board.
I guess going back then, like, were you as a young person conducting something, or has it always been a part of your life? Was there an aha moment that you maybe felt that you thought, oh gosh, you know, this is the path for the rest of my life?
I think I knew it was the path for the rest of my life around third grade. I was a pianist very early. So listening to scores, I was really into some Thomas Newman, some James Horner, you know, certain film scores really spoke to me. I would, you know, figure out how to play them on the piano. I would take my Casio keyboard and they'd have like a little four track, and I'd make my own sort of versions of scores just by playing in the symphony parts. So, and then I say third grade because I think in third grade, my mom kept this piece of paper of what, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I wrote down a pianist. So I think that I sort of had the idea a little early. Yeah, but you know, it's all led me to where I am now.
Your resume is astounding. You've been a music director, an arranger, an orchestrator, and you even list sort of a go-to collaborator for producers on your website, which I thought was so interesting. How did you find yourself in this career? You sort of identified maybe in an early sort of part of your life, it's pianist, but it's kind of grown out to be so much more, right? What was kind of the journey through maybe pianist to arranger, orchestrator, music director? How'd that happen?
You know, it's a long journey, as it is with any sort of career, especially when you're trying to make it in New York. But moved up here as a pianist, playing auditions. You know, I wanted to music direct. You know, I wanted to play some on Broadway, conduct on Broadway. That was the goal. What I found myself doing more was working in sort of creating music for different orchestrators. You know, I was working with, you know, Danny Troube and Doug, just pretty much I was what they call a copyist. So I was working with different, you know, Finale, Sibelius, working with orchestrators. Eventually that sort of led into a show opportunity where I got to create my own orchestrations for the show. So, you know, it's all just sort of each step takes you another bit further. And now when I say, you know, go-to collaborator, it's essentially because I have this skill set of orchestrating, copying, performing, and finding musicians that a lot of producers find very handy, because I can sort of, you know, run the entire thing. It doesn't have to be a separate department that's going to be doing the copy work and the orchestra. You know, I can find and create my own team to do that. So It's been a long journey, and I got to say, I've enjoyed the ride.
Well, no, I mean, I think that that's amazing, right? Because it does tell us, right, the amount of kind of like the depth of skill that you have to bring to, you know, the upcoming work that's being presented by the BPO, that you've really had to kind of put in your 10,000 hours to kind of get to the place. And with all of these sort of multifaceted skills, kind of tells us the kind of artist that you are.
I'm flattered that you brought that together. So thank you.
Going back to the idea of collaboration, I think it's incredibly important, especially within the world of kind of creating art and making art. You have been able to collaborate with so many artists, so many conductors, so many stars. What, in your opinion, would you say is the key for a successful collaboration?
I got to say, the people that I've collaborated with from the beginning, I still collaborate with now. You know, the web has gotten bigger, but I have made a strong point to never underdeliver. You know, when you get an opportunity, you have to go above and beyond and make sure that you are, you make sure that you're going to be on the next project, you know? So, I mean, it's just a matter of work ethic and never burning a bridge and don't cause too much drama.
That's actually like fantastic advice, right? That really kind of boils it down to being a collaborator. As a composer and arranger, I'm so interested by this title. I think we could do a whole podcast on it, but we won't today. But your music was heard as a composer and arranger in Once Upon a One More Time, which was the sort of Britney Spears musical, which I firmly believe, think may have a life in high schools and regional theater beyond Broadway. But can you tell the audience, like, what, you know, basically on a project like that, what does a composer and arranger do on a piece that's sort of using the music of Britney Spears?
Well, that was it was a very multi-year journey. So, you know, it all started out as let's just, you know, celebrate some Britney Spears music. Let's slap a story to it. But then the story became more and more involved.
Yeah.
And had more and more layers that created to it. And then the music had more and more layers created to it. And then we hire a choreography team that, I don't know if you know Keone Amari on the Instagram or just their work. It's very specific, and it's just, you know, incredible hip hop choreography. And all of a sudden they would request, you know, different sort of hits and things that would, you know, enhance the movement. And so it became more than just sort of playing a couple of Britney Spears tunes. You know, suddenly we're adding a string section, you know. So, you know, as projects go, you never know where it's going to end up. We started out with the idea of, you know, Britney Spears, the producing team was looking to bring her music to Broadway in some form. And it just really started out with, oh, these are her top 12 hits, and here's our script writer. And by the end of it, though, I think we had a really wonderful, layered, fun, funny show with a great cast. And I just think it kind of came out at the wrong time, unfortunately. It only didn't last too long on Broadway.
Yeah, but like I said, I think it will definitely have a life beyond it, which is really exciting.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, on the topic sort of projects that have come to you throughout the years, you are the arranger for the score of Tim Burton's Batman in Concert, which features Danny Elfman's iconic score, will be played live by the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. How did this project come to you?
It's been a few estate sort of symphony things that I was with. You know, the Prince Estate was probably the first one that I did, and it was in conjunction with a couple of different producers. One of those producers also ended up getting a few things, like the Tony Bennett Estate. I worked with that estate with their symphony show. Regardless, DC Films in Concert sort of came around, and once again, I had proven myself and done good work, and this producer said, I think you should talk to this guy about keeping the music together and making it work for sort of for a regional or international tour. So I forget actually what your question was to begin with, but essentially I took all of these old scores, which are kind of a mess from the 80s. You know, things aren't quite as organized as they are now with everybody having computers. But organizing a score and sort of pairing it and making it effective for a 50-piece orchestra. You know, back then you would just layer, you still do that these days, you still just layer, you know, strings and horns. You know, you're talking about a Hans Zimmer score now, you're looking at 14 horns. You can't really do that if you're going to go down to different symphonies. You know, they don't have 14 horns in the Buffalo Philharmonic. So we had to create a 50-piece version of this that really kept the integrity of the movie score, but make it a symphonic score that someone like the Buffalo Phil's fantastic would do it, or Indianapolis, or any of these other symphonies in the U.S. So it was a lot of work.
I bet it was. Great job. I'm so interested too, like before you maybe had started to work on arranging the score, like had you seen the movie? Had you seen it before? Were you familiar with it? Was it new?
Oh, that movie came out right at my peak time of growing up. So it was a staple. We didn't have many VHS tapes, but that was one we had. And it got a lot of watches between my brothers and I. I mean, it truly is. Even still, I've conducted it, well over 50 times at this point on stage, but I still love watching it. I can't help but quote some of the lines from Jack Nicholson or Michael Keaton. It's a big part of my childhood. So I feel really honored to be the person that gets to conduct most of these shows.
That's fantastic. Can you talk to us a little bit about the process with working with Danny Elfman's iconic score? What surprised you about it?
Well, if you know any of Danny Elfman's scores, they're frequently very busy. It kind of feels like it was kind of like, not to bring it back to Prince, but whenever I listen to Prince scores, we did a Prince Symphonic tour. There's a lot of different pieces to it. It's multi-layered, right? And somehow it all sort of works together at the end. So with Danny Elfman, I got to say, these players have to play so many notes per measure. It's different than most symphony scores now, where things really kind of stay settled for a long time. Danny really writes. He writes a lot. And a lot of times when you put these pieces together or you actually kind of look closely, you say, some of these notes actually clash. This is a little bit, doesn't quite work. Maybe it's not noticeable when they were doing a 76 piece version in the recording studio, but for this stage, we need to actually confront some of these discrepancies. So really it's about once again, as I said, keeping it consistent and maintaining integrity, but keeping it with a 50 piece symphony. And once again, I feel like I forgot the question. I go on so many tangents. it was a challenge, like I said.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's fantastic, right? I'm so interested, right, because you're an artist working with an established score that you're sort of arranging for a 50-piece orchestra, as you said. Are there parts of it that you feel that when you listen to it, you feel, oh, that's uniquely me, or that's a moment that really kind of I see myself reflected in, or is it the whole thing?
You know, I don't think that there's – I would not be bold enough to say that anything is uniquely me in the score. This is Danny Elfman's work. The best thing I could say that I did was make it work outside of the recording studio and in a live performance. I would not take any credit for anything sounding like a James Olmsted orchestration. It is tried and true Danny Elfman and his longtime orchestrator. I think Steve Bartek did most of this. Danny's worked with, and he did a lot of the Tim Burton films. So no, I take no credit. I am here just to make it work so it can be performed for a live audience.
That's fair. Thank you. Thank you for indulging me with that answer. So this has been performed before. Yes.
Oh yes. Yeah. It's we did an international tour a couple of years ago. And in fact, I'm actually wearing my Guinness shirt right now because I just got back from Dublin. We just launched a second international tour, but I'm not conducting that one. And we did, we traveled it around the U.S. For several years. And I think last week it was in Japan. It's out there. It's been performed a lot.
That's fantastic. I mean, in working on the piece, like how does the live orchestra kind of enhance the film? What's the audience reaction like when they're sitting there and they hear it or see it being performed like right in front of them?
There's nothing quite like it. It's honestly remarkable. There are so many. Once again, I love this movie, but there's so many moments where the music just enhances what you're watching on the screen so much. And then just picture, instead of it coming from, just your movie screen, your living room set, you have all these pieces in front of you. You are hearing not just everything come out of a stereo mix. You're looking at the harp and you hear it to the, on stage right. You have the basses on stage left and the brass, you have that sort of high fidelity coming at you. It's And I gotta say, once the horns, the French horns start the entire piece, once that comes in, top of the show, can't help but just they just take that breath in. Actually, we've had a couple, sometimes it's broken out into applause. You know, it's really a remarkable experience.
How might this be a great entry point for someone who's maybe never been to the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra or seen the McClein Hans Music Hall? How might this be like the perfect entry point for them to check out kind of what a Philharmonic Orchestra can do?
Honestly, I think these are the point is to get people into seeing the symphony. Not everybody wants to just go watch the Nutcracker every year, you know. Or, you know, everybody's not a Mahler fan that's going to come in and watch, you know, a 2-hour symphony. But people can really come together and listen to a wonderful score that utilizes a full symphony. This is not a score that all of these players are playing a lot. It's a very, very busy time. You hear every type of instrument. So you have people that are going to come in. They have this wonderful bond of a superhero movie by Tim Burton. Batman, wonderful. Then you get to hear, especially for people in Buffalo, you get to hear these local musicians and celebrate the Buffalo Phil, which is, frankly, it is a, I'm a New Yorker myself. So it's a symphony to be celebrated. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy that this is a successful tour and that people are coming to watch it. People are enjoying it and enjoying watching live symphonies again.
On the car ride home, after people have seen it, what do you hope they're talking about?
Great question. Well, I hope they also enjoy the movie itself, right? I hope that they notice things about the score that they've never noticed before. Because even me, for example, who I actually had to dive in and really, you know, put this thing together, conducted it many times, I still discovered things in the score that are very unique. And I'll say, you know, I could laugh to myself, oh, this is another little Danny Elfman moment. It is a very dense, layered score. So I hope they talk about things that they haven't noticed before in the music.
Well, those are my questions, but I always like to end an interview by asking, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid or anything you'd like to share with our listeners before we go? And if the answer is no, that's totally fine. But I always like to leave the door open in case we miss something.
You know, I feel like you covered everything. It was quite a good job, Daniel.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks. I appreciate it. I mean, I have to ask. Go for it.
No, please. You go.
No, I was going to say, I have to ask sort of selfishly, right? Because although as much as I like Batman, right? And I really want to encourage our listeners to go and check it out because it sort of lives like rent-free in my head. The one I think that lives more rent-free in my head is Batman Returns. Are we ever going to get the Batman Returns live experience?
Oh, it's coming for sure. and I'm excited. You know, honestly, it's, you know, it's the same team brought together. Still Danny Elfman, still Tim Burton. So it's just a wonderful kind of a re-dive into the score. So I'm very excited about it, but not sure if it's going to be this year, next year, but we're working on it.
Awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. That's great.
Yep.
Thank you so much for your time. It was a real pleasure talking to you, and we can't wait to hear the work that you've done on the movie when we see the show at the Buffalo Philharmonic next month.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Daniel.
Thanks so much.
Nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with James Olmsted. On March 14th, 2026, his concert arrangement of Batman will be played live by the BPO while the Tim Burton film is projected at Klein Hans Music Hall. Tickets are available at bpo.org and in the show notes. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.